This year what we're going to analyze is the personal component of the Churban. We're going to take a look at three different phenomena. One is the story of Yoshiyahu HaMelech, which is the 11th of the Kinos that the Kalir wrote. The second is we're going to look at the survivors themselves, the 23rd or Chav Gimel of the Kinos, which is the story of the son and daughter of Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol, who was one of the 10 martyrs, and their tragic story. And the third that we're going to look at is the 21st of the Kinos. That's the story of the Asara Harugei Malchus and the analysis of their lives. Why are we taking this theme? And why did the Kalir in the Chachmei HaMasora, who wrote the Kinos, why did they feel it was so crucial of the millions that were lost, of the hundreds of thousands that were destroyed, of the communities that were uprooted, of the generations that were uprooted? Why did they put the focus on individuals? And there really are two ideas there. First and foremost, as we'll see and we're going to develop throughout the Shir, that every Jew is a world. Every Jew is a universe. And the loss of one Jew or the loss of one individual is a world that is destroyed to us. And we know from the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that Misas Tzadikim, especially the death of a righteous, of a perfected human being, a perfected Jew, Kisreifas Beis Elokeinu, is the equivalent of the destruction of the temple. That theme we're going to develop further on. That's one idea. The second idea is this. For us to mourn properly, very often we get lost in these huge numbers. If you remember going back to the early 90s, they did a survey in America that was extremely difficult and startling to us as a Jewish community. They asked Americans, do you believe that 6 million people died in the Holocaust? And the numbers that said they believed that were less than 50%. Yes, there was a Holocaust, it wasn't 6 million. If you remember what came out in the early 90s, Steven Spielberg's Schindler's List. It was a story of a few individual Jews. It was a story of Oscar Schindler, and his story and their story. This was a movie, right? This was not live footage. It wasn't a documentary. It was a film. But the same question that was asked after Schindler's List came out, after it won the Oscar, and over 90% of America felt that 6 million Jews were eradicated, were destroyed, were annihilated in the Holocaust. Why? Because the story of one individual people can relate to. That, of course, was the power of the story or the diary of Anne Frank. The one who taught us that method, that for us to appreciate the depth of the loss, we have to start with the loss of an individual, was Yirmiyahu HaNavi, the prophet Jeremiah. Because in the 5 prakim of Megillas Eicha, 4 of them discuss the loss in macro. But Perek Dalet, Eicha Yuam Zahav, is the story of the loss of one individual, the death of the righteous Yoshiyahu HaMelech. And that's where we're going to start. Not by analyzing the 4th parak of Eicha, but where we're going to start is through the words of the Kalir, Rabbi Elazar HaKalir, the one who has brought Tisha B'Av alive to us, who enables us to feel, to experience, to learn on Tisha B'Av. And that is, I have it here in this version of the Art Scroll on page 182, and I would recommend those who are listening to the Shir, please have a copy of the Art Scroll Kinos with you, even though we'll be discussing it on camera, but if you want to look inside, it would be helpful. Page 182, Kina Yud Aleph, the 11th Kina, which is an elaboration and a development of the 4th Perek of Eicha. Who was Yoshiyahu? Yoshiyahu was someone who was a young man who came into a world that unfortunately Jewish leadership was extremely weak, and the Jewish community did not have the role models it needed. And there was a traumatic experience that happened to him. His predecessors before him had literally, Menashe, Achaz, they had literally wiped out and removed all Sifrei Torah, which was the vehicle of study. It's pre the printing press. They didn't have books. They studied and they learned from Sifrei Torah. And there was one Sefer Torah left in the Beis HaMikdash itself, only one left. And it was rolled to, was found by the Kohanim. Somehow it had not been found previously, it had not been removed, and it was found by the Kohanim, where? Rolled to Parshas Kisavo, the section of Parshas Kisavo that deals with the covenant that the new community, the Jews that had entered the land of Israel under Joshua, under Yehoshua, would make with God. It was a reenactment of Har Sinai. It was their own Kabbalah Satorah, their generation's own commitment to the Torah, to the covenant that happens at Har Gerizim and Har Eval. We know today Har Gerizim and Har Eval, the two mountains that envelop the valley of Shechem. And one of the Arurs is Arur Asher Lo Yakimis, called Divrei HaTorah Zos. Who is that referring to? The Ramban says, what does it mean? Cursed is the one that does not establish or enable the Torah to be upheld. It's the one who has the ability to cause the Torah and its institutions and its values to be upheld. It's the Melech Yisrael. It's the Jewish king. So here he was. He had inherited the monarchy as a young boy. To quote the Kina, Ben Shmona Shana Hecha Lidrosh Melokav. He was only 8 years old when he started to seek out his God. There were regents running the country. But he was looking. He was a searching young child already. And what happened? The Torah that was rolled to this spot, and the Kohanim explained to him, like the Ramban, this is referring to the king. And he understood the responsibility he had as a scion of King David, of King Solomon, of David and Shlomo, of Chizkiyahu, of the great Jewish leaders, what his role would be. And he started a tshuva movement that the Kina describes. This Yoshiyahu, this young Yoshiyahu, starts a tshuva movement, to quote the Kina, Lo kam kamahu mimos avigdor. No one had arisen as a Jewish leader like him from the days, who's Avigdor? Avigdor, we know, was the name, it's Moshe. We call Moshe Moshe because of our respect to Batya, the Egyptian princess who saved his life. But he was named by his mother and father, by Avram and Yocheved Avigdor. So let's quote again the Kina. Gam b'chol malchei Yisrael shor kamu ligdor. Amongst all the Jewish kings who had stood up to be goder, to, so to speak, to have a fence, to put a system that would enable the Jews to act properly, no one had arisen like this man from the time of Moshe. Is that to say that Yoshiyahu was greater than David and Shlomo? He was greater than Shmuel? An idea here of the Mefarshim say on this kina is what? Who was Moshe? He took a group of pagan illiterate slaves, of people who were not learned, who were not observant, and he transformed them into a nation, into the Dor Deah. He transformed them into the Am Segula, the chosen, unique, distinct people. That's exactly what Yoshiyahu did. He took a group, a Jewish people, a Jewish nation that unfortunately had stumbled due to poor leadership in a terrible way, and he built them up. It's one thing to take an 8 and make it a 10. It's another thing to take a 2 and make it into an 8. And that's what he did. But davak bo chet leitzanei hador. Unfortunately, what clung to him? What was the flaw? The cynics, asher kamu achar hadeles listor. Here Yoshiyahu did what? He removed all of the idols, all of these altars that people had worshipped on, in that polytheism was rampant. He set up Jewish education. But you want to know something? People don't change overnight, especially adults. So publicly, everything looked fantastic and wonderful. But behind closed doors, achar hadeles listor, after behind closed doors, they still had their icons. They still had their little getchkas. They were still having private altars in the backyard. Unfortunately, people don't change overnight. And as a young, idealistic, optimistic, almost naive young leader, he didn't realize and wasn't sensitive to that. There's one piece of historical information we have to give to appreciate what we're going to read now, and that is the following. As is today the case with tiny little Israel, which is in between some huge players, Islam and Christianity, a generation ago between the United States and the USSR, the Soviet bloc, and the Western world. Well, throughout Tanakh, tiny little Israel was always in between two major empires. Mitzrayim, the great empire to the south. And remember, Mitzrayim is not like the modern country of North Africa, a small little third world country called Egypt. Oh no, Mitzrayim took up a huge piece of the African continent. And there was always a major Mesopotamian power to the north. The southern empire is Mitzrayim. The Mesopotamian empire is what? Well, it depends. There were certain times, and we know it was Bavel. They're the ones who destroyed the first base of Mikdash. Prior to Bavel, there was Ashur, Assyria. They're the ones, for instance, who enveloped, they drove the 10 tribes off, which became the 10 lost tribes because they were driven off the land, and they put a siege around Yerushalayim in the time of Chizkiyahu. There was Aram. Aram was, again, Aram we called Syria, Ashur was Syria, Turkey, Babel was Iraq, but there was always a great Mesopotamian empire. So they were, that was the northern empire in Mesopotamia, in Asia Minor. The southern empire is Mitzrayim, and who's in the middle between these two great powers? Little Israel. The bridge between the African and the Asian continents, between Asia Minor and between North Africa. So with that background, here it was Mitzrayim. And the leader of Mitzrayim, his name was Paro Necho. Paro is like saying prime minister, king, dictator. It's a generic term. His particular name was Paro Necho. He wants to take the Via Maris. What is the Via Maris? That's how you get from Africa, how you get into Asia Minor. So the only way to go and do battle with Aram in the north, to do battle with the great northern empire, you have to go through Israel. It's the only way you can get there, taking the Via Maris. And what does he do? He sends a message to Yoshiyahu. He says, listen, we're going to be sending our troops through your country. We're not going to attack you. We're not here to do bad or harm to you. But we're coming through. He doesn't ask permission. He tells. What happens? Yoshiyahu, again, this young idealistic leader, he's so optimistic and so positive about the changes that have been happening, not realizing that, you know, sometimes tshuva has to become three-dimensional, it has to be deeper. He thinks that they're worthy of the famous statement from Parshas Bechukosai, the brachos and klalos that are said in Parshas Bechukosai, that what? When the Jewish people are acting the way the Jewish people should, when the Jewish people are perfected as a nation, it says, Cherev lo savor ba'artzachem. The sword, meaning, you know, the sword referring to the soldiers, battle, will not even pass through your land. What does that mean, Cherev lo savor ba'artzachem? The sword will not pass through your land? Even Rashi says, Afilu Cherev shel shalom. Not only will you not have war, but you won't have warring troops passing through the land. I mean, could you imagine, for instance, in the United States, if we'd have a Canadian army, the diesel sounds of those huge tanks coming through the Windsor Tunnel and going through Detroit and going through Michigan down Highway 75 on the way to Mexico? It would be very difficult for us as Americans, you know, it would be a very difficult, unnerving, uneasy time. That's what he wanted to protect, Yoshiyahu, and he felt that he was worthy, that the Jewish people were worthy of that protection. Yirmiyahu the Navi comes to him, and Yirmiyahu says to him, he says, don't try to prevent Paro Necho. Don't try to prevent him from coming through the land. And Yoshiyahu makes a mistake. Yirmiyahu, your place is in the shul, you give a drasha, it's in the Beis Medrash, you'll teach, you're a Kohen, you can serve in a Mikdash, but please stay out of politics. You're wrong, you're a pacifist, you're from a different generation. And he doesn't listen to Yirmiyahu. And this ultimately is the fatal mistake, the terrible fatal mistake that he makes. What does it say? It says the following. V'lo shama l'choze. Yoshiyahu doesn't listen to the visionary, the prophet, Jeremiah. L'shuv acharayim, to go back. Ki gezeira nigzera l'sachsech Mitzrayim b'Mitzrayim. And what happens? He comes out to the Megiddo Junction. Any of you have been to Israel and you've seen Megiddo, we have an archaeological site there. It was always a key fortress for Jewish kings. Why? Because that's where, when you're going north along the coastal plain, and then you have to make that right-hand turn and turn east to cut through the Sumerian mountain range, the Harei HaMelech, to get into Mesopotamia, it's always at the Megiddo Junction. That's where he comes to do battle, to try to stop Paro Necho from traveling through the land of Israel. And tragically, what happened was he loses. The Jewish people lose. We weren't worthy of that kind of hashgacha, that we could stop and prevent Egypt from traveling through the land. Yirmiyahu begged him not to. And of course, he was taken. And not only was he captured and killed, but the Egyptians made a mockery of him. This is what happens to anyone who messes with, who starts with Paro Necho and with the Egyptian army. And to quote the Kalir, the author of the Kinna, Pnei krav kikare velo alsa lo retia, vayoru hamorim lemelech Yoshia. The Egyptian archers, they took him and they used him literally as a bullseye. They took him and they set him up for target practice. Odenu otzeim einav begavio nochatzim. He's dying. You know, his eyes, lids have yet to shut. Chetz achar chetz morim velochatzim. The archers are piercing his body like a bullseye, like a target practice. Tzaduhu v'samuhu kimatara. They use him as a bullseye lachitzim. Vayizraku bo shlosh me'otz chitzim. 300 different arrows are sent into him. Ruach svasav hifza mipihu. As he's about to die, what is the last words out of his mouth? He can't even articulate it. It's just the breath they can hear on his dying lips. Tzadik hu adoshem ki marisi fihu. God is correct. I have rebelled against his command, against his word. What was the word of God? It was the nevuah from Yirmiyahu that I defied and rejected. With the death of Yoshiyahu, ultimately was the death of the people. Our future was invested in this great young leader. And all the cynics, all the leitzim that we spoke about earlier, who mocked him, after he died, they started to appreciate him. You're all familiar with the line, the three parshios we read during the Sfira. Acharei mos kedoshim emor. After the person is dead, they call him a kadosh. While he's alive, they eat his kishkas out. They mocked him. They were cynical about him. And these people appreciated what they had when it was too late. Vayekonen alav kol echa yuam. So the Kalir quotes that the eulogy, who was the rabbi that was maspid him at his levaya? It was Yirmiyahu Hanavi. Tam b'mikre echad kos Megiddo lishtos. He drank the bitter cup at Megiddo. B'moed shnas ha-shmitah. That fall, it was going to be what? It was going to be Hakel. Hakel is when all of Klal Yisrael comes together for Sukkot. They come for Sukkot to the Beis HaMikdash. We all know the Jews would come for Pesach because of the Korban Pesach. But you didn't get those kind of numbers coming for Shavuos and Sukkot. It's a long trip to come to Yerushalayim from all over. But that Sukkot, every generation, once every 7 years, what do they have? After the Shemitah year, the Jews come together and the Melech gets up and they reenact Har Sinai. Each generation has its own reenactment of the covenant. And the Melech teaches Torah, he teaches Sefer Devarim. That's Hakel, the mitzvah of Hakel that we read about in Parshas Vayelech. So instead of everyone coming together to learn Torah from Yoshiyahu, that Hakel, Nebuch, what happened? The whole Jewish world came together to be maspid him, to wail and to cry at his funeral. Because with the death of Yoshiyahu, ultimately was the death of the Jewish people. He was their future. In the 22 lines, Yirmiyahu gave the Hesped as an acrostic, from Aleph to Tav, the 22 letters of the Hebrew vocabulary. Why did he do that? Because the loss, the devastation in Yoshiyahu's death, you can't describe it, you can't encapsulate it. You use every letter in the alphabet, from Aleph to Tav, and it cannot be encapsulated. That, of course, is the methodology of Eicha, of what Yirmiyahu was trying to convey to us. And it says, because at least they cried and they were sensitive to what they had lost and they appreciated too late, unfortunately, after the fact. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Kalir says, delayed the Churban 22 years. 1 year for each line, for each expression of weeping over the loss of Yoshiyahu. This is the first great tzaddik. Misas tzaddikim kisreifas beis Elokeinu. That the nation, the people, that our future is affected by one Jew, by one young man who commits himself to a life of tshuva, to repair the sins of his fathers, to restore the glory of Malchus Beis David, to restore the glory of the Jewish people. And in his loss, ultimately, is the loss of a nation. Now we're going to move to the second of the three kinos, Chav Gimel. You know, there was a book that came out in Israel. It was called the Seventh Million. What's the Seventh Million? We mourn, we lament the Kedoshei Churban Europa, the Kedoshim of the Shoah. But sometimes what we fail to appreciate is that we have living ghosts. They're alive physically, but they also were killed in Europe by Hitler. I'll use an example. How many times have we seen, she comes from Hungary, he comes from Galicia. He comes from Lita. She comes from Marmarush. Who is their Shadchan? It was Hitler. There's no way they would have married. There's no way that they had those kind of common bonds. But she lost all of her family. He lost all of his family. And they meet in a DP camp in Germany after the war. And that marriage is not a perfect marriage. It's a dysfunctional marriage of two broken people who are the Sheris HaPleita of their families, who come from different worlds, who have been traumatized, who have scar tissue from what they've seen and what they've experienced, whether it was in Auschwitz or Mauthausen or in a work camp. And what happens? Their children live and suffer with that baggage. It's not just the 6 million that were killed. There's a 1/7 and 1/8 million of the survivors, and there's a 1/9 and 1/10 million of a second generation, of a third generation, who lives with that baggage, who lives with that scar tissue, whose life will never be psychologically or emotionally complete or whole. And we mourn on Tisha B'Av, not only for those who died, who were killed al Kiddush Hashem, but also those who were lived and who were destroyed as a function, that the rest of their life was not a life. It wasn't the life that it could have been or that it should have been. That's the story of Chaf Gimel. We'll study in a few minutes from now Chaf Aleph, which is Arzei HaLevanon, the cedars of Lebanon, the great cedars of Lebanon. What are the cedars of Lebanon? That's the foundation, the pillars of the Beis HaMikdash. The living pillars of the living Beis HaMikdash of the Jewish people are who? Are our great tzaddikim, the great Tanoim, who died al Kiddush Hashem at the hand of the Romans. And one of them was Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol, the great Kohen Gadol, the great teacher, the Gadol Hador, who mentored, who was the head of the whole Jewish educational establishment. He has two children, a young woman, a daughter, middle, late adolescence. She would have gotten married to one of the great Gedolim, members of the Sanhedrin. She would have been the matriarch of the Jewish people, the next Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Valea. He has a son. That son could have been the next Kohen Gadol, also a member of the Sanhedrin, someone who had been Marbitz Torah to Klal Yisrael. They're fine, decent young people. Their father is executed, and they're taken, like so many, they're taken out of the Jaffa Gate, which is taken west to the Jaffa port today, you know, because of the settlement of the sand at the Mediterranean in Jaffa, so you can only have a little fishing boat there. But in history, and we know this from Yonah, we know this from the time of the Romans, it was a major port, very much like Haifa or Ashdod is today, or Eilat is today. That was the major port. Caesarea was a port that Herod built, but the major port was Jaffa. It was the center of the country. And what did they use that port for? They took thousands of Jewish survivors, and they shipped them off in boats. They shipped them across the Mediterranean to Rome, where they would be sold as slaves in the Roman slave market. We know the basic principle of all of economics is a supply and demand curve. The cost of slaves became so cheap because of the thousands and thousands of Jews that were taken and sold on the slave markets in Rome as a function of the Churban Yerushalayim, of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Well, two of those young people, instead of becoming the Kohen Gadol, instead of becoming the next matriarch of Klal Yisrael, with the son and daughter, Beinu Bas, of Rabbi Yishmael. In the description that's given here by the Kalir, Esnavi Chatasi Hishmima, my sin, meaning the sin of the Jewish people that caused the destruction, V'dimasi Alechiyi Azrima, I'm page 262, Kina Chaf Gimel, my tear that streams down my cheek, Uviyom Zeh, on this day, each and every year, on Tisha B'Av, each and every year, Nehi Nehi Arima Vahima Miyamim Yamima, Eva Lev V'Nichum Chadal Chadol. I can't stop mourning, and I refuse to accept any comfort, any consolation. Al Beinu Bas Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol, Zichram Yekod Bilvavi Asima. Their memory, it burns like a raging fire in my heart. V'ahiman, I moan miyamim yamima, each and every year. Miyamim yamima, from this day, each and every year. See, the Rambam has a famous principle. The Rambam in Hilchos Avel says the following. That it says, anyone who cries too much, that person is a tipech. Anyone who mourns too much, he says, because it's minhagol sha'olam. Of course we cry. There's a concept called the Shlosha Lebechi. There's a Shiva, there's a Shloshim, there's a Yud Beis Chodesh. There's a Yortzeit every year. Of course, We know what it means to lose a mother, a father, God forbid, a child, a spouse, a sibling. And there's a mourning period, and Halacha acknowledges that, and it deals with it in such a beautiful, meaningful way. But the Rambam says, someone who is in a constant state of depression and doesn't get out and doesn't rebuild their life and does not wean themselves, which of the Avelis, the first the Shiva, then the Shloshim, then the Yud Beis Chodesh, enable the person to rebuild themselves and come back and to function. In the pain and sorrow turns to memories of gratitude in a sense of mission to continue the legacy of the loved one. So someone who doesn't go through that healthy cathartic process of Avelis that the Torah has provided, that Chazal provided us, that person arrays a tipesh. Tipesh means not that the person is an idiot, but emotionally the person is overcome by their emotions. It's foolish, it's not rational. Why? Because minhagol sha'olam. Everyone was born to die. Every human being was born to die, and part of living means dying, and part of living means that there's going to be an avelus process. That's minhagol sha'olam, when someone dies naturally. But when someone dies, al kiddush shem shamayim, when someone dies, the Rav said very often, when he would explain this kina in Arzei Halavanon, that when someone dies, al kiddush shem shamayim, for the sanctification of God's name, that's not minhago sha'olam, that's not natural. That a person perfected themselves and led a pious, proper life, a perfected life, and then they were killed because of that, that you can never get over. That's not something we can be weaned of and move forward. And that's what the Kalir is saying here. Vahima miyamim yamima. Each and every Tisha B'Av, I will cry and mourn over this. Eis nishbu v'naflu l'shnei adonim. They were abducted, and they fell into the hands of two of the Roman aristocrats, two adonim. V'heim shcheinim zeh l'uma zechonim. And it turned out that these two aristocrats lived in the same neighborhood, one of the high-end neighborhoods in Rome. And they were bragging to each other about what a great mitzvah, what a great deal that I got. I bought this slave, this Jew, and that Jew. And you remember 5 years ago what it would have cost to get a slave like this? And look at what I have. Ze'amar mishivas tzionim, from the Zionist slaves, captives. Shavisi shivcha levusha shanim. By the way, Tzion here is referring to the Beis HaMikdash, meaning from the captives of Jerusalem. I've abducted a shivcha, a slave girl. Oh, gorgeous. Kalavana beziv with cluster panim. It's like that radiant moon. Uvitoar kitsia v'yamima. Kitsia and Yamima are the two daughters of Eov, two of the daughters of Eov that died, when they described the beautiful woman, a gorgeous, stunning, you know, but on the one hand, gorgeous and stunning. On the other hand, there's a beauty to the modesty. That's a description he gives of the Bas Kohen Gadol. Vahima yamim yamima. And the Kalir says, just listening to that, disgusting, how that's, they refer to a woman that could have been a matriarch of Am Yisrael, and that's the way they talk about her, like she's some cattle on a cattle auction. Re'ehu sipur lo bikiflayim. So his peer talked even double the amount. Hein ani mishvi Yerushalayim, you know, from the captives of Jerusalem. Shavisi eved yefeinayim. Oh, you got to see the eyes. You can see like the health in a person. You can see something about the quality of a person when you look in their eyes. Kashemesh, you say that she radiated like the moon? This one radiates like the sun at full noon. Bo nizavge munachalka bint. I'll tell you what, let's breed them. I mean, it sounds like a farmer today. You know, you have a refrigerator full of semen, full of sperm from different bulls or from different horses, and you want to breed the cows or breed the horses to produce a thoroughbred, to produce a purebred. That's what they're talking about human beings like. That's the way they speak about Jews, about tzaddikim. Bo nizavge munechalka bintayim. Bivlados will have children kimo kochve shamayim. Look at the kids that these people will breed. L'shema zos titzalna oznayim. The Kalir says, my ears ring. You ever have that ringing in your ears that you can't concentrate, you can't think, it shakes your head? That's what I hear this talk. That's what it does to me. L'zecher zos esmadai afrima. Just even that the mention of this, I want to tear kriya. We go back each and every year, halachically, every Jew is an avelus. Every Jew, not just avelus of Shiva and Tisha B'Av, we're in a status of mi shemesa mutalafan, of a status of aninus, of the death isn't, the dead is in front of us. Of course, the kinos that we say, these are the hespedim, we relive the funeral, the tragedies of Am Yisrael each and every year. He says, I want to go back and I want to tear kriya over this. So what happened? Kiskimu al zos shneyam yachad, is the two of them agreed to this? La'erev, that evening, zivgum becheder echad. They put him in, of course, there was no electricity then. It's a time of the first century of the Common Era. So they're in the dark. And they expect the two of them to breed. V'adonim mibachutz libam kechad, as the masters are waiting outside. Ve'im bochim b'mar mefesh v'fachad. The two of them having no idea, having no clue that it's brother and sister. They each are in a corner of a room. Instead of, God forbid, abusing each other, they're crying. Crying throughout the night, ad boker, bichyasem lohit mima. Ze yispod bichil v'kir lev yimse, nin aron eich l'shivcha yihinose. The grandson of Aaron, a Kohen, we know from Parshas Emor, the strictures, the obligations that a Kohen has, just in terms of not only sexual strictures, but in terms of who and what the Kohen can marry. And now he's going to be bred to a shivcha. The gam he and his sister, not knowing that her brother was the other person in the room, tiyalel, she is moaning, betigra shose, bas yocheved, the daughter of yocheved, ech le'eved tinose. Yocheved, who produced what? Beis Aaron, who produced Beis Levi. Right? Yocheved, the matriarch of Shevet Levi and Shevet Kahuna. How can she be bred to an Eved, which of course will invalidate her from marrying someone who's a Meyuchas? Oy kizos gazar omer v'osa. Woe that this was decreed, was stated by the Almighty. See, they saw the Churban. They saw Jewish tragedy as a consequence of the flaws of Klal Yisrael. So the Kalir here says, Lizos yivku osh uchsil v'chima. Over this is something that we don't just cry about. This is not something we mourn about. This has cosmic ramifications. The cosmos are distressed, are distraught at this. What is osh? What is ksil v'chima? Ursa, Orion, and Pleiades weep over this, quoting the famous verse from Iyov. Or boker ze kihikiru, what happened? As the morning light starts to seep in through the cracks. And they realize, oh my God. Hoy achi, hoy achi, it's my brother, it's my sister. V'nisdabku yachad v'nischabaru. They cling to each other. Ad yotzitza nishmasam b'nishima. Until they die weeping in each other's arms. What they could have been, yeah, they survived. But they survived as a shell of themselves, as a pale shadow of what they were. Is not when we study and learn the story of what should have been the future Balei Masora, the future of Am Yisrael, destroyed and snuffed out. Think about all those young men who studied, whether it was in a Baranovich, whether it was in this yeshiva, whether it was in this community, the people who would have become our parnesim, our leaders, our talmidei chachamim, the people that would have become our future mothers and fathers. They survived. But they didn't survive. They survived physically. But they died somewhere between 1939 and 1945. We see the story of the great survivors, the survivors who rebuild themselves, who rebuild their worlds, and who have built all of our communities in Israel and America and Canada, Australia. How many of our communities sit on the shoulders of the survivors who came with nothing and built it for us? But those are the stories we tell. What about the survivors who ad hayom hazeh, one-third of them are living in poverty as we speak, but the survivors we don't tell the story about? That's the story of Beinu Bas Rabbi Yishmael. Again, the second kina that analyzes the tragedy of the individual. Because every Jew is an Olam Malay. Every Nefesh B'Yisrael is an Olam Malay. And this is the story of Beinu Bas Rabbi Yishmael. Our third and final kina that follows within this theme can be found in the art scroll. I have it in this art scroll on page 250. It's Kina Chaf Aleph. We plan on coming out at the OU. Is it one of the future volumes of our OU publications of producing the Torah of the Gadol Hador of Rabbi Soloveitchik? thanks to Rabbi Simon Posner and Rabbi Menachem Ganak, we've put together a volume that gives a line-by-line commentary on the Kinos. It's based upon the years in Boston when Jews from all over the world would come to Boston for Tisha B'Av to sit and mourn and learn Kinos and study and say Kinos all day with the Rav from early in the morning till late in the afternoon. And from those years, from 1970 until the Rav no longer could do it, which I believe he went through 1983, 1984, the Torah, the insight into the themes and the meaning of Tisha B'Av, into the themes of Yirmiyahu, of the Midrashim, of the Kinos by the Kalir and by the great Rishonim. So those, many of those Torahs are going to be published by the OU, thanks to Rabbi Simon Posner and Rabbi Menachem Ganak, in a volume that we'll have of the Kinos of the Rav. Much of what we've said until now and much of what we are going to say in Kinah Chaf Aleph comes from those Tisha B'Avs at the Maimonides School in Brookline in Boston. Arze halavanon adirei haTorah. As we said before, the cedars of Lebanon. Who were the foundations of the Jewish people? Not just the foundations of an inanimate Beis HaMikdash, but the living Bate Mikdash, the Balei HaMasorah, our Gedolei Hador. The Rav said the following. We study the Asara Harugei Malchus. We study it twice every year. Of course, the Musaf of Yom Kippur, Amitz Koach that we say, and in the midst of Amitz Koach, we have the story of the Asara Harugei Malchus. It's much more expansive, much more developed. There the theme is what? That the theme of Yom Kippur is atonement, is expiation, Yom Kippur. One mechaper the Jewish people have is Misas Tzadikim. The death of the righteous is a mechaper. Now we have to explain that, and I'll tell you why. Because God forbid no one should think that when we say Misas Tzadikim is a mechaper, we mean like what the Christians mean. I grew up in a small town, of probably about 14, 15,000 head of cattle and about 800 people, a little town called Lindenville, New York. We had a bar referred to as a watering hole. We had a post office, a public school, a couple of churches, and a general store. That was a little town, and it was farms surrounding that little town. As you come into town, the Methodist Church had a huge sign, and I won't say it literally, but euphemistically, the carpenter of Nazareth died for our sins. And as you left town, the Methodist Church had a second sign. The carpenter of Nazareth died for our sins. That's how you knew you were coming into our little town. That's how you knew you were leaving. That is not what the Chachmei HaMasorah meant when they said that the Mises Tzadikim are Mechaper, and why we study the Asara Harugei Malchus, the 10 martyrs, in the story of Yom Kippur. Why do we study it there? Because when we appreciate who they were, what they were, what they meant to us, their role in conveying the Masorah, the beauty of the Masorah, the ethical beauty, the moral beauty of it, the principles, the philosophical principles, and we see what we've lost, we're mechazik ourselves, we strengthen ourselves, and we force ourselves to live up to their standard and to be memale makom, to fulfill, to walk in their foots and to keep that Masorah alive and to keep the principles and the values of Yiddishkeit alive. That's the idea. We study what we've lost, it forces us to continue in their footsteps. If I can use a modern analogy, when the world lost Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal and Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, in a very short period of time we lost those three Gedolim. We weren't able to produce Gedolim in America like them. We couldn't produce anyone who could walk in their footsteps, literally. But you know the amount of Torah and their principles that became disseminated after their death? Because we realized we didn't have them and we realized what we'd lost. In the role of continuing the legacy of how they built Torah Judaism in America, the Talmidim of the Rav Zatzal, of Rav Moshe Zatzal, the whole Torah community, that's Mises Tzadikim Mechaper. That's not what we're doing on Tisha B'Av. That's Yom Kippur. On Tisha B'Av, it's a different idea. It's the idea that we articulated before. Mises Tzadikim Kisreifas HaHeichal Kisreifas Beis Elokeinu. Death of the righteous to us, the living, walking, breathing, Bate Mikdash, they being killed and destroyed, Al Kiddush Shem Shemayim, for the sanctification of God's name, for the sanctification of heaven, that is worse to us, is more devastating to us than the destruction of a building. Kisreifas beis Elokeinu. They are the beis Elokeinu. Because what is the beis Hamikdash? It's a place of hashra'as hashchina. It's a place that man can relate and can perceive God. A place where we come to from a perspective of awe and reverence, where we retire ourselves, where we come in contact with the Gedolei Hador, the national Sanhedrins, where we come in contact with the Kohanim who are learned, who are there to educate us. It's a transformative, cathartic experience. It's a place of reverence and awe. Well, what is the Beis Elokeinu? It is encountering the Tzaddikim, the Gedolei Hador, the pious ones. And that we mourn that loss here today. Another introductory remark we need to make. This story, which is based upon a series of midrashim, didn't literally happen. Meaning, the notion of the Roman emperor or the Roman proconsul over Judea calling in the 10 scholars and asking them the story of Joseph. What happens when 10 abduct one of their own? What's the punishment? It's chayav misa. How can you kidnap another Jew? It's a capital offense. Well, your ancestors did that to Joseph, to their brother. You're going to pay because they were never punished. You're going to pay for their sins. Obviously, that story never took place. How do I know it never took place? Because the first two of the Asar Arugei Malchus, Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, the Nasi and the Kohen Gadol, they were killed probably at some point in the siege of Jerusalem prior to the Churban Habayis. Let's say 68, 69, 70, sometime in that period they were killed. When were the other eight killed that we spend most of our time on? The other eight? These are all Tanayim who were killed because they defied the Hadrianic decrees. After the Bar Kokhba revolt, which happened in the 130s, Emperor Hadrian and the Jewish proconsuls who were overseeing Judea and the Jewish people, they enacted because they couldn't take it. The Jews kept defying them, ultimately with the ultimate act of defiance, the Bar Kokhba revolt, which took 9 Roman legions. It only took 4 Roman legions to destroy Yerushalayim in the Beis Hamikdash some 65 years earlier. You know, they had to take this crack legion from as far as Great Britain. They had to take tens of thousands of soldiers out of Great Britain. This is antiquities. And move them into Judea just to stop Bar Kokhba. You understand that's why, unlike the destruction of the Churban, where you had history written, Josephus was the official, Yosef ben Matisyahu, the official historian of the Romans, and they were proud of it. That's not what happened by the Bar Kokhba revolt in the 130s. It's like what the Nazis did. When there was a revolt in Treblinka, a revolt in Sobibor, they plowed over Treblinka, they plowed over Sobibor. They tried to destroy the records. They didn't want anyone to know about these crimes against humanity, against the genocide, against the sick, heinous thing that they did to little children, to Altababis and Altazades. The same thing goes with the Romans. The 500,000 that were killed in the aftermath of the Bar Kokhba revolt, those weren't soldiers. Those were innocent civilians. The Rav said that the Gemara that describes the 24,000 Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, they died of Askara. Askara was Lashon Saginor. They didn't die of diphtheria. They were killed and slaughtered by the Romans in the Bar Kokhba revolt. They were part of the 500,000 that was killed. You weren't allowed to mention it. You couldn't mention it because it was something the Romans didn't want known. So in Jewish records, it couldn't be mentioned. It always had to be spoken about euphemistically. So what happens? The Jewish apostates, the Rav said this based on Yerushalmi, like Elisha ben Avuya and others, they come and they said, you're never going to stop the Jews. They're not just Am Kshei Orva, stiff-necked people to God. They're stiff-necked to the Romans, like they were to the Greeks, like they were to the Persians and the Babylonians before them. The only way you're going to stop them, I'll tell you how you're going to stop them. You've got to take away their education, their religion, because once there's nothing to fight for and once there's nothing to stand behind, then a dumb Jew, an uneducated Jew, is an assimilated and intermarried Jew. That's how you stop them. What happened? They engaged in Hadrianic decrees. No transmission of rabbinic leadership, of the Masorah. That's why they prohibited the giving of smicha. That's how Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, they murdered him in a heinous way at the age of 70. Rabbi Chutzpitz HaMeturgaman, right? The great teacher of Torah, the great erudite, articulate teacher of Torah. They cut out his tongue. Rabbi Hanina ben Taradion, who defied the Hadrianic decrees, he was wrapped in a Sefer Torah because that was the vehicle of teaching. They didn't have books, and as we said before, they had the text, the cloth is what they taught from. And they burnt him and the Sefer Torah. Rabbi Akiva, they took him to, we know where they took him, Caesarea, where we can see it. We have the archaeological remains today. And publicly in front of this Colosseum, he was over 100 years old. They took him out with an iron comb, and they flayed his body every day until finally he died from the wounds of having the steel comb wrench his elderly body apart. But these people all defied, these great Tanaim all defied the Hadrianic decrees. With the exception of Rabbi Akiva, who was extremely old at this time, who was already a Talmud in the time of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. He wasn't a great Tana at that point, but was a Talmud. With the exception of him, most of these Tanaim were not alive when Rabbi Yishmael was killed. They weren't alive when Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, the Nasi, was killed. Some of them, if they were alive, were infants, were little toddlers. So the story is not a literal story. The Medrash is conveying an idea. What's the Medrash conveying? The Medrash is conveying the following. That what was the flaw that led to Churban Beis HaMikdash? The historical Jewish flaw that we've always had to deal with and we've never overcome. And that's sinas chinam. That's intra-Jewish hatred. That's animosity between Jew and Jew. The Romans have a siege of Jerusalem, and there are three factions of the Jews fighting each other, like nothing is happening outside. Instead of being united, they're fighting each other. This one has the Temple Mountain, this one has the southern part of the city. And we all know the story of Kamsa bar Kamsa. Many of you on Tisha B'Av study that, as well as many other stories of Sinas Chinam. The whole animosity of one Jew despising and being jealous of another Jew that started, that became part of our natural Teva with the story of the brothers and Joseph, which they were misakein, they did a tikkun to that chait, and that's the famous Haftarah of Yechezkel from Parshas Vayigash, that ultimately we will repair and we will be misakein the flaw of sinas chinam. In Tisha B'Av, instead of a day of mourning our tragedies and our factiousness, will be a day of celebration of Jewish unity. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case during the period of the Romans. And these gedolim, or the Gedolei Ador, what the Medrash is saying is they were punished because they were responsible for the generation, for the generations that unfortunately, they tried as much as they could, but it was generations that unfortunately could not overcome Sinas Chinam. That's the Asara Rugei Malchus. But they themselves were great, great pious tzaddikim. And the Hadrianic decrees backfired. Because instead of them terrorizing the Jews by killing Rabbi Akiva, instead of them terrorizing the Jews by killing Rabbi Hanina ben Tarajon, it backfired. Rabbi Akiva became the poster child. Rabbi Hanina ben Tarajon became the poster child. In the chant was, we have to continue the legacy of Rabbi Akiva. So Jews who were afraid to engage in public Torah study, or private Torah study for that matter, Jews who were afraid to defy the Hadrianic decrees, they gained chizuk. Because they were not going to allow Rabbi Akiva's death to go for naught, Rabbi Hanina ben Tarajon's death to go for naught. And they defied these decrees and did what? And instead they kept the Masorah. Those five young men who Rabbi Akiva taught after having lost all of his Talmidim, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, Rabbi Yehuda, who became eventually when there was an abetment and an easement of the Hadrianic decrees and they reestablished the Sanhedrin in the north, Rabbi Yehuda became the Nasi of the Sanhedrin. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua, those five young men, and then their Talmidim, Rabbi Meir's greatest Talmud, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, they reestablished Torah. They saved Judaism. This was one of these points in Jewish history. When these great Tanaim were being killed or were being slaughtered by the Romans one by one in the aftermath of the Bar Kokhba revolt, it was one of these points where Torah could have been lost. Torah could have been forgotten. But on the shoulders, and they gave their lives for this, on the shoulders of these Tanaim, the Torah remained, the Masorah survived. And because of that, there's an Am Yisrael today. Because of that, we the mice who live on their shoulders, they gave their lives for us. And their Talmidim were Moser Nefesh. But ultimately, it survived. This is the background to this kina. these individuals we mourn for on this day. And we never stop mourning. We never can get over their loss. How those holy mouths, those holy tongues, those holy hearts were slaughtered in such a heinous way. And unfortunately, we, the children of survivors and the grandchildren of survivors, we look at the Yeshiva Baranovich and Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, what should have been the next generation of Gedolei Hador, were wiped out. The Tzaddikim, the Kedoshim, the Rosh Yeshiva, the Melamdei Torah. In the Hasidic world, we have the Esh Kodesh. We have a small remnant of what happened and what happened to the Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto. We know from the story of Shelus Tshuvas Mimama Akim, from that halachic work, what happened to Lithuanian Jewry. The Kovna Rav died at the beginning of the ghetto of the Kovna Ghetto, but how the whole Balei HaMasorah of Lithuanian Jewry, that was the heart and soul of our Masorah, Belarus and Lithuania, what we call Lita, what happened to them? Only 8% of Lithuanian Jewry survived. Only 8%. Maybe 10, 11% of Polish Jewry survived. These tzaddikim, our own Rebbe Akivas, our own Rebbe Chinya ben Terajons, not to mention what we've suffered very recently in Yeshiva Merkaz Orav, the tzaddikim and the kedoshim who've died at the hand of the Palestinians since the Oslo War broke out less than a decade ago. This is what we're mourning. Let's read some of the text inside as we continue. The first two, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel and Rabbi Yishmael, were taken. And they each wanted to die first. They knew they were going to die. There was no chance of them surviving. They didn't want to have to suffer the fate of seeing the other being killed, the other being tortured. So what happened? They drew lots. Kinfol goral al Rabbi Shimon. The lot fell on Rabbi Shimon. Pashat Savaro. He extends his neck. Ubacha kenigzur gezera. Why does he cry? He wonders, what have I done? What sin? And he wants to do atone. He wants to say vidui, to confess before he dies. And there's a medrash, not that he did anything on purpose, but of the widow who was outside while he was in a meeting, and she's thinking to herself, if I wasn't just this humble, poor, lonely widow, if my husband was here, he was chashuv, I would have been accepted in, I wouldn't have to sit out in the waiting room. And we know the pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, right? What happens if we afflict the widow or the orphan? Even though he, God forbid, never did this, b'mezid, didn't even realize this was happening. But Rabbi Yishmael says to him in the Medrash, maybe this is why this is happening. And he's consoled by that and confesses for that. So, Mizera Aaron shal bevaka shal livkos al ben agvira. As he was decapitated, Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol of the Zera Aaron, he asks to be able to cry over the ben agvira, over the Nasi of the Sanhedrin, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the descendant of King David, the descendant of Hillel. Natal Rosho Nesanul Al Kuvosav. He takes the head of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and he puts it on his lap. Minora HaTahora. What does it mean, Minora? Minora is what radiates, what enlightens the Jewish people. That, of course, is what? Is the Torah of the Chachamim. The Minora always represents the Or Torah. Som Einov, he puts his eyes to the eyes of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Piv Al Piv, his mouth to his mouth. Ba'ava Gemura. Onav Amar Peh HaMizgaber B'Torah. This mouth that was so brilliant, so magnificent in the Torah that it taught, Pisom, immediately, Niknesa love. There's a kanas that dies like that, a misa mishuno, the chamura, such a sick, heinous, horrific death. Then what happens? Tziva lahavshides rosho besara schira. The daughter of the Roman proconsul said, he's gorgeous, he's outstanding. We spoke about how good looking his daughter, his son were in the kin of Chav Gimel. Of course, they inherited the genetics of their father. So she, what did she want? Peel off his face and put it on a bust. We'll make a model of this gorgeous. I can always look at this gorgeous, handsome man, this stunning man. And they peel it away. And only when does he cry? Rasha haposhet, when the wicked one is peeling off the skin. Eis higia lemakam tefillin, mitzvah sbara, to the point where he would put the tefillin shorosh. Then tzak tzaka, He cries out. Me'acharav, next is the execution of Rabbi Akiva. Heviu es Rabbi Akiva. And again, this is some 60-some years later. The execution of the first two was in the late 60s, around the year 68 to 70. The execution of Rabbi Akiva and the others is probably sometime in the 130s, during the Hadrianic Decrees, late 130s, early 140s. Oker harim v'tochen an zuba zuba svara. The great mind of Rabbi Akiva, who literally could uproot mountains and grind them. Was his ability to analyze, to conceptualize, to define the analytical, linear thoughts and mind of Rabbi Akiva. V'sarku es besaro b'masrek shal barza lishtabra. Day after day, they would take him out and publicly comb his flesh with the iron combs. Yatzasa nishmasa be'echad ubas kol amra. Ashrecha, Rabbi Akiva, gufach tahor b'chol minei tahara. What happened? As he dies, the heavenly voice comes out. What does he die with? The words of Shema Yisrael on his lips. Afilu hu notels nafshecha. I will love God. I will accept God's yoke, even if it means giving my life for God. And he says, gufach tahor. Your very physical body transcended the status of a physical body. And it became Tahor, purified. Ben Bava, Rabbi Yehuda Ben Bava, who risked his life to give smicha, to continue the chain. Acharav, he was the next one they killed. Nerag ben Shivim Shana Bidearu, 70 years old. You know, the Romans decreed that not only will they execute the people who receive the smicha ordination, the people who give the ordination, but they'll destroy the closest town to it. So Rabbi Yehuda Ben Bava went out into the hills in the Galilee. We have actually the place of his kever. You can go there. The Arabs unfortunately desecrated it, tragically desecrated it a few years ago. It's been reestablished in the hills of the lower Galilee, of the central Galilee. What happened? There was no community near that way. No one would suffer from this. And he gave smicha. And unfortunately, we assume it was a Jew, a Meshumad, who ratted him out to the Romans, a Moser who ratted him out to the Romans. And the Romans are coming. And the Talmidim are fleeing and they want to take their Rebbe with, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, who's 70 years old. He says, no, the whole reason I risk my life is that Judaism should survive, should continue through you. Let me go, leave me alone and go survive and teach Torah and continue the Masorah. And the Romans get him and they take him. Who was Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava? He was 70 years old. He was a man who was Yoshe Bisanis. He would fast day after day. Hayanakid, he was clean. Naki v'chassid, a chassid. He would always go above and beyond the letter of the law, b'malachta olamara. And they pierced his body, very similar to the description given of what was done to Yoshiyahu HaMelech in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash. Here after Beitar and during the Hadrianic Decrees, they took their spears and they stabbed and stabbed him again and again. Rabbi Chanina ben Tarajo and Acharav Makil Kihilos Betzion Shara, in defiance of the Hadrianic Decrees, he would gather Jews and publicly teach them. Yoshe V'Doresh, he would sit and derive principles, the Sefer Torimo with the Sefer Torah, v'hikifu b'chav le'zmora. They enveloped him. They took bundles of vines and they burnt him. So uri tzisu behemu krachu b'sefer Torah. They wrapped him in the Sefer Torah. Svugin shel semer, in their sickness, they took these wet wool sponges and they put him on him in order that it should delay the death. Hinichu alibo shelo yamus mehera, that he shouldn't die soon. Chassid Rabbi Yesheva Vasofer, Haragu Amma Mora, Zraku Vishluchu Laklovim, Vlahukbar Bifura. They didn't even allow him to be buried. What did they do? They fed him to the dogs, Rabbi Yesheva. Yatzisabachsko Alav, Sheholo Hinichu Klum Mitaras Moshe Lashamra. There wasn't one aspect of the Torah that he didn't observe, that he didn't. Lashmira means not just observing it, means he didn't understand it, didn't teach it, didn't have an understanding that could be transmitted. Acharav Rabbi Chutzpas B'Yom Evra. That's the famous Rabbi Chutzpas HaMeturgaman. Very often the Rosh Yeshiva was the Gadol Hador, but he wasn't necessarily the Gadol Hador at articulation. Not every Gadol could be like the Rav, that they were the master of the generation not only in Torah, but also in communication and in articulation and being able to inspire, to educate and enlighten. So very often they would be the great Torah minds and you'd have a Meturgaman who would communicate the Torah, who would make it palatable for the people to understand. This is who Rabbi Chutzpas was. He was the greatest orator of his day. What would happen? Of haporeach nisraf, a bird flying over would be burnt up, a hevel piv, just, as the Torah was being taught. It was kemedura. It was like a fire coming out of his mouth. Tzadik Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua Ba'achrona Ne'arag. The last one who was killed was Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. Yom Erev Shabbos HaYazman Kiddush, V'Yikadish V'Yikra.
We have a minhag that goes all the way back, at least to this point in Jewish history, that we don't just say the Kiddush Bari Priya Gafen and the Brach of Kiddush. What do we say first? V'Yichulo Shemayim V'Aretz V'Chol Tzva'am.
We say that paragraph. As he's saying that paragraph, he's standing up, they wouldn't even let him finish Kiddush. They killed him, they slaughtered him in the middle of him saying Kiddush. Cherev shalfu alav v'lo hinichu b'chaim legamra. In this world, they didn't allow him to complete the Kiddush. Yotzasa nishmaso, his neshama left, b'bara elokim lasos, before he could finish that paragraph. Kahina v'chahina hosifu b'nei avla. Kahina v'chahina, don't think it was only these 10. It wasn't only these 10 that were killed, that were slaughtered al Kiddush Hashem. And tragically, not only by the Romans, but that was true throughout Jewish history, throughout the millennia. As you'll study the kinos related to the Crusades, the first crusade of 1096, it was a case in the time of Tachvatat, 1648 and 49, at the hands of the Ukrainians and the Khmelnytsky and the Cossacks and their Tartar mercenaries, how they slaughtered Kedoshim and Tzadikim and Hasidim. And the same is true in the time of the Khurban, the same is true till this day at the hands of the Arabs. Kahinu v'chahinu hosif b'nei avla l'anos bigara. B'skila sreifa herik v'chenek miyuchal ashara. All different types of executions and deaths. Noseres mimena yochlu arayo sepsura. The lamb, the Jewish people, we've been torn apart, ripped apart by the lion. The next line, four lines from the end of the kina, chazei hatnufa v'shok hatruma, the breast that is the waving done from the korban, the shok, the thigh, the truma, it's lit, the lifting and the waving that is done. What's the idea here? These were our best. See, in a korban that is brought, there's two components to the kapara, the Rav would say. One is the hakrava, bringing the korban. The second is the kohanim, consuming the korban. Their lives were given, they were consumed. These are the chazei hatnufa v'shok hatruma. The finest of, it should be an atonement for us. And what is that atonement? We spoke about it in the introduction, that we should appreciate who and what they were and how they sacrificed, and we should live up and continue their legacy and live and continue the way they would have wanted to have lived and what they would have wanted for us and what they gave to us. We should take that blessing, that mesorah that they were moser nefesh for, and we should build upon it and ultimately become the Am Segula, become a unified people, a Jewish people that doesn't backstab, that isn't out to get each other, that works together, that can tolerate differences, that never philosophically gives up on our principles, but that it's never personal, that we shouldn't be like brothers that hate each other and want to kill each other and want to hurt each other. Chazei hatznufa v'shok hatruma, tarfu aryeh hakfira. They've been ripped apart by the lion. Yetiv Hashem v'lo Yosef od liyasra. Hashem, please make our life better. Please never continue to do these things. No more Jews dying at the hands of terrorists. Ametz birkayim koshlos. The weak in knees, please strengthen them. Chelek Yaakov u'moshia be'es sara. The remnant of Jacob. This Sheris HaPleita that has survived the Khurban of Europe, the Khurban of the Shoah, that has survived Islamic terrorism. Save us in our time of distress. L'tzedek yimloch melech, the melech HaMashiach, who will ultimately follow in the footsteps of the ultimate melech, the melech Malchei HaMlochim, will be our leader. Yomar shalmul yemei evlech, the days of mourning should be complete, should be over. L'ora nisa v'neilech, into the light of God, to the light of your wisdom, enable us to travel and to follow down that path. This was the last of the kinos that describe the destruction of the individual Jew, of the Hasidim, Tzadikim, Tahorim, Kedoshim, whether it was Yoshiyahu HaMelech, the great Baal Tshuva, who created this great Baal Tshuva movement, whether it was the story of the survivors and the children of survivors, and how they suffer, even though they survive physically, ultimately what became of their life, or whether it's the story of the great Tanaim, the great Baalei HaMasorah, who survived in the aftermath of the Bar Kokhba and realized that the destruction of Bar Kokhba wiped out close to one-third of world Jewry. The only thing that compared to Bar Kokhba was the Shoah, was the Khurban of Europe, which also wiped out one-third of world Jewry.
much more quantitatively. We think 500,000 to 600,000 Jews were killed by the Romans in the aftermath of the Bar Kokhba revolt, as opposed to the 6 million. But each of them probably in its time were the eradication and genocide of one-third of world Jewry. And it was these Tanayim who decided that they would give their lives in the aftermath of all that to save Klal Yisrael, to save the Torah, to save the Mesorah, to save everything we view as precious, everything that makes our life meaningful, that makes our life worth living. We acknowledge their sacrifice. We acknowledge their loss. And tragically, throughout the millennia, they have served as a paradigm. It just has not been them alone, but they've been a paradigm for others who have lived in their footsteps and have made the ultimate sacrifice, l'shem shemayim, al kiddush shem shemayim.